Last night we talked a little bit about the book of Deuteronomy, and if I can just attach these words from last night to this morning, I would just say when we come to the book of Deuteronomy, we're coming to a powerful, powerful constitution of the theocratic society of Israel. When you go back to the Torah, first five books of the Bible, you come to Exodus, and you begin to see what God is doing as he's extricating the people of Israel out of the most powerful nation in the world. And he does this, God does this, by not firing a shot, an arrow, not throwing a spear. He just does it amazingly through his miraculous power. 2 million people walk out of Egypt. And while they are walking out, every household in Egypt, probably every household in Egypt, they're in the backyard with shovels and they are digging a grave for the firstborn, whether animal or person. This is the book of Exodus. It takes 90 days, 3 months, for them to go through the Red Sea and to land at Mount Sinai, Mount Horeb. 3 months later, they are all around the mountain of God. They're going to remain there for over 11 months. And while they're there, at that particular time, they're going to get instruction about how to build the tabernacle. And then after they get the instruction in the book of Exodus, they commit a horrible sin because Moses is somewhere up there on the mountain. We don't know where he is. So Aaron, why don't you do something for us? And so he makes God, a God. And it's an incredible story as you read through chapter 32 and chapter 33 and chapter 34 of Exodus. The amazing contrariness of the people that are under a theocracy. So when you consider that, and then God says in chapter 34, Moses, here's what's going to happen. Here's the game plan. The game plan is this. You're going to go ahead and take the land because I promised it, but I want you to know I'm not going with you. That's how chapter 34 of Exodus begins. All the people repent, and Moses prays, and God says, okay, I will go with you. And Moses says, God, if you don't go with us, if your presence doesn't go with us, and you don't show us the way, we're going to stay right here. We need you. We need you. So what happens after that is the plans that had been given in the earlier chapters to the tabernacle now are enacted. And so the book of Exodus concludes with the building of the tabernacle and then the glory of God filling the tabernacle. During this time, God also dispenses or dispatches, might be a better word, the book of Leviticus to Moses. And so he writes down the pattern of worship, how God's people are to worship him. And so this takes place all at Mount Sinai, all within an 11-month period, amazing things taking place at this time. And then when you come to the book of Numbers in chapter 10, it's time for them to finally leave Mount Sinai. And the text says in chapter 10 and verse 11 of Numbers that in the second year and in that very beginning months, the month that you have the leaving of Mount Horeb. And the book of Numbers chronicles the next 38 years. So you have, it's very important that in your mind you're keeping Genesis in its rightful place as the beginning and God taking one family. In chapter 11 with Babel, there's loads of families of the earth wanting to be great and make a name for themselves. In chapter 12, God takes one family from one man who has no children. And what God does in that book with the Abrahamic covenant, an unconditional covenant that God makes with Abraham. And then to see this one family, now made up of 70 people, start Exodus chapter 1. And all that takes place that I've just described, and the 38 years of their circulation throughout the wilderness. And then finally, We have in Deuteronomy chapter 1, what should have been, chapter 1 verse 2, what should have been an 11-day journey from going through the Red Sea to Kadesh Barnea. 11 days. Now 40 years later, in fact it says in the text, in chapter 1 and verse number 3, in the 40th year, in the 11th month, and on the first day of that month. Wow. It's amazing. What is the book of Deuteronomy? As I said to you last night, brothers and sisters, the book of Deuteronomy is the theocratic constitution. The theocratic constitution for these people, the people of Israel. And I won't go back and rehearse all that, but just so you understand that God now is going to rule over this people, that he has selected from all the nations of the earth. He's going to rule over these people through a human being. And that's the theocracy that we read about in the scriptures. This is a constitution. It lays the principles, the laws, the boundaries, exactly how God is to be worshiped and what God expects and the direction. All the things are there in this 28,000-word document. Our Constitution, United States of America, 4,500. Oh, by the way, with 27 amendments. There are no amendments to this one. But when I look at the book of Deuteronomy, we hold in our hand, brothers and sisters, an amazing document. An amazing document. Quoted 50 times in your New Testament scriptures. So we look at this book because we come as a people of grace. And we look back to see the example so that God would help us so we might migrate properly in the world, the pagan world in which we live. The verse that has been selected, and you know, when you first get a verse, we want you to speak from this verse. It's kind of overwhelming. It's daunting. Because a verse always has a context. And the context is within the whole drama of Scripture. You can't rip a word, a phrase, a verse out and say, I know what God is thinking without putting it all together. So when I look at this verse, it's a powerful verse, chapter 13, verse 4. Ye shall walk after the Lord your God and fear him and keep his commandments and obey his voice, and ye shall serve him and cleave to him. Look at those six verbs. Walk, fear, keep, obey, serve, cleave. Last night we looked at the word cleave and what that means. The one term that has been asked to speak on today is this term found in verse 4, obey. Obey. When I look at this word obey, it has an immediate context. In your English Bible, chapter 12, verse 32 is actually verse 1 of chapter 13 in the Hebrew Scriptures. So let's look, if you will. Start at verse 29 of chapter 12. When the Lord thy God shall cut off the nations from before thee, whither thou goest to possess them, and thou succeedest them and dwellest in their land, take heed to thyself, that thou not be snared by following them, that's the nations. After that, they will be destroyed from before thee, and that thou inquire not after their gods, saying, how did these nations serve these gods? Even so will I do likewise. Thou shalt not do so unto the Lord thy God. Don't do this to Yahweh, your God. Don't do this. For every abomination to the Lord, which he hateth, have they done unto their gods. They have served their gods with these abominations that true Yahweh, that true God, just absolutely despises. He hates it. So why would you say we are going to go after these gods? By the way, just a reminder as you work through the text, these gods, as I said last night, they are carved from wood and they have to be picked up and carried and then set up. And then if a wind comes, go nail it down so it doesn't fall over. Verse 31 again, thou shalt not do so unto the Lord thy God. Don't do this to your God. For every abomination to the Lord which he hateth have they done unto their gods, for even their sons and their daughters have they burnt in the fire to their gods. Chapter 13, verse 1 in the Hebrew text. What things soever I command you, observe to do it. Thou shalt not add thereto, nor diminish from it. Turn back real quickly, chapter 4. You'll see the same phraseology that's there. Chapter 4, verse number 1 and 2. Now therefore hearken, O Israel, unto the statutes and unto the judgments which I teach you, for to do them that you may live and go in and possess the land which the Lord thy God gives your fathers. You shall not add unto the word. We don't have 27 amendments to this theocratic constitution. Don't add to this word which I command you. Neither shall you diminish it aught from it, that ye may keep the commandments of the Lord your God which I command you. Back to chapter 13. What's so incredible in verse 4 is this. When he gives these verbs, watch carefully how the verbs are dispensed in the verse. Ye shall walk, how? After the Lord. Go hard after your God. Fear him, awe, respect. Keep his suggestions? No. Keep his commandments. Now watch this, because here's our word for today. Obey his voice. Obey his voice. You see, brothers and sisters, when I look at this particular text, I'm challenged on two fronts. When I look at the immediate context here, I'm challenged, number one, about just the whole source of this Constitution. Often we'll say, okay, Moses wrote Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. And in one sense, we are right. But in another sense, we're not right. It's when he says his voice. Whose voice is he speaking of? Not Moses. Moses is writing this. But it's very important when you look at the source, make no mistake, this is God's commands, not Moses. This is not a republic. They're the voice of the people. This is God speaking, and this is what he wants accomplished. The source, very clear. To me, when I look at the word theopneustia in the New Testament, I think of the word inspiration. Here you have an amazing display of how inspiration works, where you have God giving his word through the means of, in this case, as we said last night, a guy who's over 120 years old, 40 years in Egypt, 40 years on the backside of the desert, 40 years leading these people, over 40 years, because it's been 40 years and 11 months they've been in the wilderness. And so here is a guy that God has been shaping and molding. And so when he writes the book of Deuteronomy, here's how inspiration works. It's God who is the source, and God is working through the human instrument using his personality so that what comes out from his personality, the way he thinks, the way he operates, and all that God has been doing to shape him, what comes out is something that's absolutely perfect. This is inspiration. It is the confluence, two rivers coming together and no longer can be distinguished. It is the confluence of this man, Moses, and the work, as we find in 2 Peter, of God the Spirit, as it's working together to bring together a constitution, a manageable document, so that in their hands, as we said last night, even the future kings, Deuteronomy 17, must make a copy of this constitution, his own copy. And as it says in Deuteronomy 17, and read it and heed it and everything in this do, this will keep him humble. So this particular book that we hold in our hands that we say Deuteronomy, these are words that are extremely important. The source of this is God himself. The purpose of this is really interesting. Look down, if you will, at verse 3 of chapter 13. It says, thou shalt not hearken unto the words of the false prophet or that dreamer of dreams, for the Lord your God is proveth you or is testing you. Why is he testing you? To know whether ye love the Lord your God with what? All of your heart and with all of your soul. As we said last night, what's unique about this theocratic constitution is at the very core is this love from individuals to their God, and then that's chapter 6, the great Shema, and then you have the love of God himself, chapter 7, who chose you out of love among all of the nations, not because you were the most, you're the fewest. But I chose you out of love. So at the very core of this constitution is this intimate relationship, as we talked last night about the word cleave. This intimate relationship, the highest or the deepest might be a better term, of all relationships between you and your God and God and you working together. This is the purpose. But it's interesting, the purpose is that you might be tested and that you might know what's in your heart. How do you know what's in your heart? Not by what you confess or profess, it's by what you do. By what you do. That's why verse 4 is so important. Those verbs. Walk. Fear. Keep. Obey. Serve. Cleave. These are descriptive terms that help us understand our heart. We say we love God. Okay, let's look at these six verbs. How are we doing? How am I doing? Because I'm speaking, brothers and sisters, to me. Last I checked, in my flesh there dwells no good thing. So when I look at this text and to challenge us with this word obey, it's interesting to me that if you take your King James Bible and you open it up and you look in a Strong's Concordance, you're going to find the word obey at least probably 10 times. If I counted right, it's 10 times, okay? I may not have counted right, but you can do that some other time. And don't look on your phone right now, okay? But that's what it says. That's in my thinking anyway. But what's interesting is that each time it comes from a specific root verb in the Hebrew text, and that verb is shema. You've heard of the great shema, haven't you? Turn back to chapter 6, if you will. Look at chapter 6 and verse number 3. Actually, the great shema begins in verse 4, but this is very important. Verse 3, hear, shema. Hear. Therefore, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it might be well with thee, and that you might increase mightily as the Lord God of thy fathers has promised thee in the land that floweth with milk and honey. Here, there it is, Shema. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one, Echad, unique. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy might. There it is. And thou shalt teach them diligently to thy children. Talk of them when you're sitting, when thou sittest in thine house. See, this is not for the college classroom. It's not for the seminary classroom as we try to dissect Christology and pneumatology and eschatology and all these things. This is for the home. This is for dad and mom to pass on to their children this incredible love for God. So how does that happen? It means that you are, from the moment that child comes into the home, here's what you're doing. You're talking to him. I think singing is okay because that's instruction, right? When thou sittest in your house, and when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, and when thou risest up, and thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thy hand, and they'll be frontless between thine eyes, and you'll write them on the post of your house. I mean, everywhere you turn, it's God, 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 his voice, his voice, his voice. I think sometimes when people put scriptures somewhere, I wonder if they're really comprehending the voice of God. It's not something I just tack on to my earring or to my necklace or to my bracelet. Something I just put. This is God's voice speaking to us. So when I look at chapter 13 and I see obey his voice, the word obey is shema. The root word is shema. By definition, here's what one lexicon says, and I jotted it down if I could read it to you. Each time the term obey is used, it means to hear, to listen, to perceive, to discern, to understand, to cause to do, to obey. So that when you look at the text, And you see this idea of hear or hearken or listen. The root word, usually, oftentimes I would just say it this way, the root word here in Deuteronomy is Shema. So when you get here in chapter 13 and you look down here at verse number 4, what are we to do with his voice? What he said back in chapter 6. Same thing. Hear, O Israel, here's your great God. Now this is what I want you to do. I want you to hear his voice. And so here we have it in verse number 4, the same thing. Obey, hear, perceive, understand, follow through. Obey is the idea. Now, there's a reason why. I know my time is limited here, but the reason why, I want you to capture this because this is found within a context of chapter 13. We are to hear the voice of God, with a hearing with the idea of perceiving and to follow through with obeying. Okay? The one we fear, we're listening to his voice, and we're now going to follow through in our daily life. But there are going to be three other categories of voices that are out there that are calling you away from his voice. And that's in chapter 13. That's what 13 is all about. And you already know the first one because I kind of gave it away when you read through the text. But just notice 13:1 in your English text. If there arise among you a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, and he giveth thee a sign of a wonder, and the sign of the wonder actually takes place. And saying, let us go after other gods, which thou hast not known, and let us serve them. Thou shalt not, and here's that Shema, thou shalt not hearken, listen, perceive, understand, follow through, going this direction because it's a voice of a so-called prophet. So when you look at chapter 13, the way that you find verse 4 is within the context of an outside voice in contrast to your God's voice. The outside voice looks like a prophet, acts like a prophet. He even, in verse number 2, he even says, here's a sign or a wonder. And there's the sign or wonder. It happens. Verse 3. Thou shalt not listen, hearken, obey unto the words of that prophet. You see, there are religious voices that are calling to the people to do things contrary to the voice of God. That's the context. And we don't have time to go through what's to take place, except I can just tell you this. You're to kill him. Voice number 2 is even maybe more difficult than a voice of a religious leader that's doing signs and they're coming true, and that's the voice of family. Look at verse 6. If thy brother, the son of thy mother, thy son, thy daughter, even the wife that lies in your bosom, thy friend, which is one after your own soul, they entice thee secretly, saying, let us go and let us serve other gods, which thou hast not known, thou nor thy fathers, namely of the gods of the people which are round about you, nigh unto thee, or far off from thee, from the one end of the earth, even to the other end of the earth, thou shalt not consent. And there's your word hearken again, nor obey, nor discern and understand and follow through unto him. Neither shall thine eye pity him or her, neither shalt thou spare, neither shalt thou conceal, but kill. Voice number 1, religious. Very persuasive, very powerful. Voice number 2, wow. Family voices that are pulling you away from the voice of God? Yes. And then there's one more. Verse number 12, and you'll see it here. This is so incredible. This is the loud, ungodly majority voice of an entire city. And you're a godly person in a city that just seems just full of voices going the other way. Look what it says in verse number 12. If thou shalt hear, say, in one of thy cities, which the Lord thy God hath given thee to dwell there, certain men, the children of Belial, and they gone out from you, and withdraw the habitation of the city, saying, let us go, serve other gods, which you've not known. Then you're going to inquire. You're going to make a search. Verse number 15, you're going to smite the inhabitants of the city with the edge of the sword. Destroy it utterly. See, the vast majority of the city is saying secretly, let's not go this way, let's go our way. And God says, absolutely not. And you see exactly what takes place. And in fact, it's kind of interesting as you follow through in the text, verse number 16, and thou shalt gather all the spoil of it into the midst of the street thereof, and have at it. No, burn it with fire. That and the city. And verse number 17, there's the word cleave again that we talked about last night. And there shall cleave not of the cursed thing to thy hand. In other words, nothing is to stick like Achan of old. Nothing is to stick to your hand. No matter how beautiful the garment might be, or how expensive, no matter the gold or the silver, whatever it is, put all of it in a heap, light it on fire. Why? Because my voice stands. This is the theocratic constitution. So there are three kinds of voices that are pulling at the individual. And the application is very easy to see, brothers and sisters, for us today. The voices that we hear from religious leaders, the voices that come from even families that are very close, the voices that come from the ungodly loud majority. And they're all calling. And in fact, you're just going the wrong way. But when you see what is taking place here, those verbs in verse 4 are extremely important because they expose your heart, verse 3b, and exposes that you love. And so here it is, walk, fear, keep, obey his voice, serve, and this deep term of cleave. So, brothers and sisters, I don't want to leave it there, though that is Deuteronomy, but I'd like to move, since we are people of grace, I'd like to take us to one more passage in the New Testament. Would you turn with me before I close and turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Paul gives an amazing statement with three applications. Maybe you've got them already marked in your Bible. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, he looks to the Old Testament. He looks to Torah, and as he looks to Torah, there's a reason for that. It'll say it twice, once in verse 6, and again once in verse 11. And then he's going to give three applications from verse number 12 down to verse 15. So watch the text as you work through it, and let the text speak to you this side of the cross, people of grace. Moreover, brethren, I would not that ye should be ignorant how all of our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea and all were baptized into Moses. There was an identification to Moses because of what they experienced through the cloud and through the sea. We're in Torah now. All did eat that same spiritual meat. All did eat the same spiritual drink, or did drink the same spiritual drink. For they drank of the spiritual rock that followed them. That rock was Christ. And with many of them, God was not well pleased. By the way, if you want an exact number, two made it through, right? But there were other godly people. I mean, just think of Zelophehad, the last male name that just sticks out powerfully in the last chapter of Numbers. And he had five daughters, and these were incredible women. And you can read about that later. So not all, but it's the vast majority. As he says here, God was just not well pleased. For they were overthrown in the wilderness, verse 6. Now these things were our examples. To the intent, we should not lust or desire evil things, as they also desired, lusted. Neither be ye idolaters, as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed, and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now these things happened unto them for examples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are to come. Three applications. Number one, wherefore, let him that thinketh he stand take heed lest he fall. There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful. You got that? God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that which you're able. How many times did God, I don't know if I can go another step. Yeah, I'll tell Job that. 10 kids, boom. Gone. God, but will with the temptation also make a way of escape so that you can bear it. Whatever that temptation is, whatever that challenge is, you can bear it. Why? Because of your self-discipline? Absolutely not. That's why he said in verse number 12, take heed. When you think you stand, you'll fall. The power is not in us. The power is in the Spirit who lives within us. He's called the Spirit of life, Romans 8:2. And so when he says application one, go back and look at Torah and see what is taking place and see these people actually saw things happen that were amazing. Can you imagine walking through the Red Sea and the waters stand up like a wall? Wouldn't you love to be a fisherman at that time and see the fish just coming up and just watching as they're going out? I've tried to catch that one before. Just think of it. And then they get to the other side, and now the Egyptians come, and all of a sudden the wall collapses. I love what Josephus says. How do you think Moses armed the people? Simply with all of the stuff that washed ashore from the Egyptians. But think, wherefore? Number one, make sure you're standing properly. And be assured temptation is going to come and difficulty is going to come. But also be assured God is faithful. He will not allow you to go through something that you cannot go through because of his power. Number two, verse 14. Wherefore, dearly beloved, my dearly beloved, run from idolatry. How does the book of 1 John end? Same way. Run from idolatry. Because we may not have idols like an image that we laugh at. You know, you make it, you have to nail it down because a big wind is coming. But in our heart is an idol. And in our heart is an idol. And from God's perspective, I mean, you are not loving the Lord with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind. You've got this idol. The idol could be your face. The idol could be things. The idol could be a person. The idol could be a job. The idol could be fame. It could be anything. Satan can use any good thing and turn it into a mess. So he says here, be very careful. All the good things that you have, God has given them to us richly to enjoy. The Apostle Paul said, I got that. But let me tell you something. Be very careful it doesn't become an idol. Application number three, verse 15. I speak as to wise men. In other words, if you're a wise person, that's how I'm speaking to you. Judge ye what I say. In other words, in the privacy of your heart, as you look at these examples, don't be foolish and say, if I saw the Red Sea, I would constantly live for God. Oh, I know. If God, you would just come down and tell me my next move in life, I'll do it. How about the man that was in Sheol, and he lifts up his eyes to Abraham and says, I tell you what, please send somebody back from the dead. If somebody comes back from the dead, then my brothers will not come to this place. And what did he say? They have Moses. If they will not listen to Moses, they wouldn't believe it if somebody rose from the dead and came into town and said, hey, I mean, look at Jonah. Jonah goes into town, right? It took the power of God to turn those people's hearts. And that's exactly the point, men and women. So I'm speaking to you as wise people. I'm speaking to myself. And as I speak, judge. You judge if this is true or not. It brings us, brothers and sisters, it brings us to the point of choice, making decisions. And I pray that God will help us when we think of fearing God through obeying. I'm glad you put it in a participle form, obeying. But the idea is, let's do it. Let's go hard after the Lord. And I'm speaking to myself. Daniel, you've got to go hard after Christ. Because these voices are out here. Religious voices, family voices. The ungodly majority of voices trying to turn us away from the voice of our God. Brothers and sisters, don't let it happen.